Can we have this conversation in light of what we know to be given to us in scripture and tradition and the recent magisterial teaching?
What is a blessing, and when can it be offered? We examine the recent controversy in the Catholic Church over same-sex blessings, insight from some leading moral theologians. A papal envoy from the Vatican travels to Washington to talk to President Biden about finding peace for Ukraine. A report from the White House.
Every life from the moment of conception to natural death should be cherished and protected and celebrated.
Support for women, children, marriage, and family. The Catholic Church teaches us life should be protected and celebrated. But are Catholic dioceses providing enough support for their own employees? A report ahead.
He said, grandparents are often forgotten, and we forget the wealth of preserving roots and passing on what the elderly have received.
Reading from the writings of Pope Francis as we commemorate World Day for Grandparents and the Elderly this weekend. EWTN News In Depth starts now.
Could such a blessing be given in a way that doesn't cause scandal, doesn't cause confusion, doesn't call into question what the church believes and has always believed about marriage?
Welcome to EWTN News In Depth. Controversial questions about same-sex blessings that seem to challenge the church's definition of marriage. Some say the blessings stem from an inclusive pastoral desire. Others, from calculated efforts to undermine the faith. A small but growing minority of Catholic clergy have conducted these blessings, most notably in Germany, where same-sex blessings have been held in open defiance of the Vatican and church teaching. At this October Synod on Synodality in Rome, discussions about such blessings will be a high-profile agenda item. Reporter Mark Irons begins our coverage.
Marriage is reserved for one man and one woman. It's a teaching within the Catholic Church that comes from divine revelation.
The Church didn't invent marriage. The Church isn't the author or creator of marriage. God created marriage back when he created male and female in his own image.
So same-sex couples cannot receive the sacrament of marriage, but can they receive a blessing from the Church? We asked Dr. John Grabowski, a professor of moral theology specializing in sexual ethics and marriage at the Catholic University of America.
The only way I can really see a way forward here is if we find a way to say, well, we're going to give a blessing to individuals as individuals who are trying to live the Christian life. We are not blessing or sanctioning this relationship as such if we know that there are disordered aspects to it.
Grabowski reflects on the topic in light of recent comments from a top church official. In an interview, the newly appointed head of the Holy See's Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith, Archbishop Victor Manuel Fernandez, defended the church teaching on marriage, but he also indicated it could be possible to impart a blessing on same-sex couples as long as there is no comparing or confusing it with the reality of sacramental marriage. Archbishop Fernandez said, if a blessing is given in such a way that it does not cause that confusion, it will have to be analyzed and confirmed. In the Church, a blessing is categorized as a sacramental. The Catechism of the Catholic Church says these are sacred signs which bear a resemblance to the sacraments. They include a prayer and a specific sign, such as the laying on of hands, the sign of the cross, or the sprinkling of holy water. The Catechism states, sacramentals do not confer the grace of the Holy Spirit in the way that the sacraments do, but by the Church's prayer they prepare us to receive grace and dispose us to cooperate with it. To the question, does the Church have the power to give the blessing to unions of persons of the same sex, in 2021 the Holy See said no.
The Dicastery for the Doctrine of the Faith said it's necessary for a blessing to be given to what God has designed to be objectively and positively ordered to receive and express grace.
The statement continued, for this reason, it is not licit to impart a blessing on relationships or partnerships, even stable, that involve sexual activity outside of marriage, as is the case of the unions between persons of the same sex. But the question may not be going away, and Grabowski thinks it could be discussed at the upcoming Synod on Synodality in Rome, especially as bishops in Germany have shown support for same-sex blessings.
I think the folks from Germany will be undoubtedly trying to push this forward and put it on the table for discussion.
But Catholic bishops from African countries will most likely oppose Germany's agenda. One vocal bishop from Kenya this year said the support of LGBTQ goes against the natural order of beings. God created a man and a woman for each other. Last year, when asked about the possibility of blessing same-sex couples following the Holy See's 2021 response indicating it wasn't allowed, the Relator General of the Synod on Synodality, Cardinal Jean-Claude Ulrich of Luxembourg, said, "Frankly, the question does not seem decisive to me." And in a recent interview, Cardinal Blaise Supich of Chicago said, "We need to ask ourselves, what exactly does it mean to bless a union? Is it blessing a friendship, a non-sacramental union? We need to clearly define what we mean by that. I don't see that clarity in the church at this point." Meanwhile, Pope Francis provided this clarification regarding same-sex unions following the 2015 Synod on the Family when he said, "There are absolutely no grounds for considering homosexual unions to be in any way similar or even remotely analogous to God's plan for marriage and family." Following the lead of Pope Francis, Grabowski believes if any theological development regarding blessings is produced, clarity must remain.
If we're thinking about giving some kind of blessing, we have to do it in a way that makes clear we are not in any way seeing this as analogous to or you know, kind of like marriage. It's not.
Mark Irons, EWTN News In Depth.
So let's talk more about this issue. What exactly is a blessing? What does the church say? And can it be applied in the circumstance of a same-sex union? For more clarity and to answer all of our questions, we're joined by Father Thomas Petrie, president of the Dominican House of Studies in Washington, D.C. He's an assistant professor of moral theology and pastoral studies. Father Petrie, it's so great to have you back with us. Let's start at the beginning. What is the basic definition of a blessing? What is it and what does it do?
So a blessing is a sacramental. You know, if you think about blessings, they are liturgical actions of the church. They're public ritual actions. There's actually a ritual book for them, the Book of Blessings. The church teaches that the sacramentals, they're sacramentals, that they're sacred signs that resemble the sacraments in a lot of ways, and they signify spiritual effects that are sought by the church's intercession. The Catechism of the Catholic Church is very clear that the sacramentals, like blessings, do not confer the same grace of the Holy Spirit that sacraments do, but they prepare us to receive and to benefit from the graces of the sacraments. So even the word sacramental has the word sacrament in it. So a sacramental is a public action that leads us, or public devotion that leads us to the grace of the sacraments and blessings, whether it's blessings of persons or blessings of objects to be used in prayer or in the liturgy, are all about cultivating a disposition through the intercession of the church to receive the very graces that God deigns to give, most especially in the sacraments.
Now, you just mentioned grace, and I'd love for you to get into that. What is being communicated in a blessing in particular? What is communicated when a couple is blessed? And specifically, just talk to us about what grace does.
Well, grace obviously is primary for us. Every good that we do, you know, as baptized Christians, we do in, through, and with the power of God's grace. We do nothing but sin on our own and without God's grace, right? So grace is primary, and it's by cooperating with God's grace that not only do we do good, but we also become more and more configured to Jesus Christ. So when you talk about a couple being blessed, you know, it's always a blessing for a purpose, right? So if you think blessing of a married couple about to give birth, the blessing of a mother about to give birth, which often includes a blessing of the father, a blessing of parents, a blessing of, I don't know, lectors to read in the liturgy. It's always for the sake of some purpose that, and this is also part of the definition of sacramental, to give glory and praise to God.
That's beautiful. Well, the controversy here isn't over same-sex weddings, but over the blessing of a same-sex partnership or union. How is that different, or is it different?
Well, it is different. In 2021, the Dicastery from the Doctrine of the Faith issued a letter that really said, explained out very pastorally and I thought very charitably, why blessings of same-sex unions are simply not permissible or not allowed. And one of the big reasons is because what are you blessing? Now, we could, some want to distinguish between a same-sex union that some call maybe a chaste friendship between two people of the same sex. That also can be problematic, you know, in other ways. But the real problem is that there's nothing as part of that relationship that is not intentionally or directly ordered to God in a way that gives God praise and glory, that simply shouldn't already be coming forth from one's own baptism. Moreover, the dicastery said, rightly, is that because sacramentals are related to sacraments, it would appear, if we were to bless same-sex couples, it would appear to many people as if you are, in fact, doing a wedding. People don't necessarily make that distinction. In fact, often when we talk about couples who are married outside of the church, what do we always say to them? You need to get your marriage, what? Blessed. Even though what we mean is you need to go through the ritual of the sacrament of matrimony and have your marriage, you know, solemnized by the church, by a minister, by a witness of the minister of the church. But a blessing can create all sorts of confusion. And it's not to say that individuals can't be blessed, but it is to say that if you're blessing a relationship that is already somewhat outside of the norm, it would be akin, I always say to people when this conversation comes up, imagine a married man wanting to have a blessing, have a friendship blessed with a unmarried woman. It would be really strange, right? Because I think because we are plagued with the effects of original sin, we know that there's just something not correct about solemnizing that sort of relationship with a blessing and certainly not with a sacrament.
Well, now I remember many years ago, Archbishop Charles Chaput, now Emeritus of Philadelphia, he wrote an article about the charity and mercy of telling the truth and communicating that with love to those who struggle with their sexuality. This seemed to be a theme from the former prefect of the Dicastery of the Doctrine of the Faith, Cardinal Ladaria, who you just mentioned in his 2021 letter. In this question of same-sex unions and same-sex blessings, he offered that mercy, charity, and truth are a big part of this. Tell us how truth fits into this.
Well, you know, we live in a society, and it's not just America, it's pretty much worldwide, you know, that people want most especially to be affirmed in their own decisions, in their own self-proclaimed identity, and that is the truth, that truth is mine, and you're not respecting my truth unless you affirm my truth. And that's problematic on a number of levels. And the church can't get involved with that because we understand that truth is objective. Truth is not mine to possess. Truth possesses me. It becomes what I need to configure myself to. And truth, not only natural truths, the truths of reality, but also, because we are Catholics and Christians, the revealed truth, the revealed word of God that God has revealed about the nature of the human person, the nature of human relationships, the nature of marriage, that it's not pastoral to sort of continue to affirm people in their desire simply to be affirmed in what they are doing and what and how they're choosing to live, especially when how they're choosing to live is, we can say, contrary to the revealed word of God and the reality of the human person. That's true whether we're talking about those who struggle with same-sex attraction, whether we're talking about, you know, college kids who are struggling to be chaste and to preserve themselves for marriage, to simply speak about what the truth is, because the truth is not only what sets us free, it's also what's going to make us happy in the long run. And that's really the bottom line here, is that we fundamentally believe that these sorts of relationships do not lead ultimately to fulfillment and happiness, health and holiness.
Right. And that's what brings us closer to Christ. Well, really, really fast, because we're out of time. Many people are nervous. These questions are being asked. They're going to be presented at the Synod. Is the Synod actually able to change church teaching on these questions?
I don't see how. I don't see how a Synod can change church teaching. You know, the Holy Father has said this. A lot of bishops who are going to the Synod have said this. Now, some will say, well, it can change discipline. It can change practice. Look, I trust what the Holy Father is attempting to do here, which is just to open these things for discussion. I don't expect, and I would be very surprised if there was an attempt, especially on this matter, given what the Holy Father himself has said, the 2021 letter from the Dicastery of the Faith, Doctrine of the Faith, he himself saw and approved before it was published. I have a hard time seeing the Synod changing anything about this.
Well, we're so grateful for this clarity, and we hope to have you back. Thank you so much, Father Petrie.
Thank you, Monsi. It's always good to talk with you.
If you would like to learn more, we invite you to read a companion report to this coverage in our sister publication, an article called Seven Things to Know and Share About Blessings. It's available right now at the National Catholic Register. There's much more ahead on this edition of EWTN News In Depth. We'll hear from our White House correspondent about the Vatican Peace Envoy's visit, seeking solutions for the war in Ukraine, and
he's spoken over the years so many times, insisting that the elderly be with the young people and that the young people do not forget the elderly.
Pope Francis celebrates Mass this weekend with a focus on honoring our grandparents and the elderly. How he plans to intertwine that with a look ahead at World Youth Day.
The Catholic Church has its great fair share of extremely philanthropic people.
And later, a leading philanthropist in the Catholic world tells us how he has been able to mix big business, family, faith, and community. Al Kelly's faith journey coming up.
News from the battlefield in Ukraine. The White House confirms the Ukrainian military has started using cluster bombs that it recently received from the United States. The U.S. hesitated in sending the munitions, which are controversial and outlawed by many of America's closest allies. As Russia continues nightly missile attacks, Kyiv is firing cluster munitions in a push to break through well-established Russian defenses that have slowed Ukraine's counteroffensive. The tiny bomblets they scatter across the battlefield can cause serious injury to civilians decades after fighting ends.
It is clear that Russia continues to use food as a weapon of war. This time, the impact is not only on the people of Ukraine, but also on global food supply and prices.
Reaction from the State Department after Russia announced the end of a deal allowing Ukraine to ship grain to the rest of the world through ports on the Black Sea. Ukraine has been called the breadbasket of Europe, and its crops help feed millions of people in Africa, the Middle East, and Asia. Russia says it will not resume what's known as the Black Sea Grain Initiative and allow ports to reopen until restrictions are lifted on its own exports. The White House warns Russia has mined sea routes and may be planning attacks on commercial transport ships. As the conflict grinds on, the Pope's peace envoy on the Ukraine war made an important stop in Washington to meet with President Joe Biden. Cardinal Matteo Zuppi, along with a Vatican delegation, met with some members of Congress on Capitol Hill on Tuesday before his White House meeting with Mr. Biden. He was accompanied by Cardinal-elect Christophe Pierre, the Apostolic Nuncio to the United States, who explained the Pope's purpose in dispatching his peace envoy to Washington.
The Holy Father wants to help for the, in the process of peace, you know. And he is fully aware of the difficulties, you know, of the situations, but he wants to, you know, to introduce into the discussion, you know, in the kind of dialogue.
Following their meeting, the White House said President Biden and Cardinal Zuppi discussed the Holy See's efforts providing humanitarian aid to address the widespread suffering caused by Russia's continuing aggression in Ukraine, as well as the Vatican's advocacy for the return of forcibly deported Ukrainian children. The Vatican envoy's trip to the White House comes after a flurry of other peacekeeping trips. At the end of June, he met in Moscow with Patriarch Kirill, the head of the Russian Orthodox Church. In an effort to ease tensions, Cardinal Zuppi shared the Pope's message, asking that the churches work together for peace and justice. And just weeks before that, Cardinal Zuppi traveled to Ukraine to meet with President Volodymyr Zelensky. The two discussed the atrocities suffered by the Ukrainian people and next steps to pursue on a humanitarian level in search of ways to achieve a just and lasting peace. For more details about Cardinal Zuppi's meeting at the White House with President Biden, we go to EWTN News White House correspondent Owen Jensen. Owen, thank you so much for being with us. You've been tracking the Cardinal's visit since it was announced. What did the church hope to achieve?
Monsi, the meeting between President Biden and Cardinal Zuppi was closed press. Let me put that out there first. Right? That means no reporters, no pictures, no sound bites. Instead, what the White House did and what the Vatican did was they released what's called a readout, or basically a short summary of what transpired in the meeting. We know that it was cordial, as you would expect, polite, respectful, both sides listening, lasted about two and a half hours, according to most reporting. At the meeting, Cardinal Zuppi handed President Biden a letter from the Pope, quote, emphasizing the Pope's sorrow for the suffering caused by the war. And one segment of the population in Ukraine that has really suffered tremendously in the ongoing conflict, children, of course, they've been injured by bomb blasts, killed. And the other day, the press secretary telling me this. Take a listen.
What Russia has done, kidnapping thousands of Ukrainian children from their families and transferring them to other parts of Ukraine or deporting them to Russia, is obviously horrifying. So we applaud, we certainly applaud the Vatican's advocacy for the return of these children. We think it's important advocacy. And so that is something that the president discussed with the cardinal yesterday.
Now, Owen, what about the controversial cluster munitions? We've discussed that recently. What did the administration have to say about that?
Well, that's a good question, Monsi. The cluster bombs, of course, very controversial. The Catholic Church and Pope very much adamantly opposed to their use. They're indiscriminate in their destruction, and they kill people years after sometimes the fighting is done. In fact, the Pope has asked in the past for the United States to sign a ban on those, using those bombs. Right now, Russia and the U.S. have not signed any ban on cluster bombs. So that's where that remains right now. I want to add one last thing. Just this, as the war goes on, started in February 2022, here we are in July 2023, no signs of abating. The other day, the press secretary announcing what it calls a new security assistance package for Ukraine that includes surface-to-air missiles, artillery rounds, mine-clearing equipment, and unmanned aerial systems. Monsi?
More support there. Thank you so much, Owen. We appreciate you keeping an eye out for this.
Okay.
Top headlines are next in the Week in Review. A legal twist after the Iowa governor signs a new six-week abortion ban law. Unprecedented backlash against the Catholic cardinal in the Middle East and honoring grandparents and the elderly. Pope Francis takes the lead. A short-lived heartbeat law in Iowa tops the Week in Review. An Iowa state judge issued a stay on the abortion ban just days after Governor Kim Reynolds signed the six-week ban into law. It went into effect immediately when Reynolds signed it into law last Friday, but now remains on hold while the courts decide its constitutionality. Until then, abortion remains legal through 20 weeks of pregnancy in Iowa. Pro-abortion groups filed the lawsuit shortly after the Republican-controlled legislature fast-tracked approval of the bill. In a statement responding to the ruling, Reynolds promised to fight the issue all the way to the state's Supreme Court. The United States Senate has begun discussing the National Defense Authorization Act after its House passage last week with several Republican amendments. Both Senate leaders emphasized the importance of meeting in the middle and getting the critical defense bill passed as soon as possible.
The sooner we pass the NDAA, the sooner we can deliver on full-year appropriations for defense in each of the other areas Senator Collins, Senator Murray and our colleagues are working to finish in committee.
I certainly hope we do not see the kind of controversy that severely hindered the NDAA process over in the House. Both sides should defeat potentially toxic amendments and refrain from delaying the NDAA's passage.
The Republican-controlled House passed its version of the must-pass bill last week, largely along party lines, after adding language related to the Pentagon's abortion and gender-affirming care policies. Now, the Democrat-controlled Senate proposes its own version of the bill. Once it's approved, lawmakers begin the process of working on a compromise that can pass both chambers. The Senate's final vote on the defense bill will likely take place next week. Israeli President Isaac Herzog garnered a warm reception from both sides of the aisle on Wednesday, giving an address in Congress to commemorate 75 years of statehood and of his country's alliance with the United States. He affirmed Israel's relationship to the U.S. and called it absolutely unbreakable. Not all lawmakers were happy with his visit, with a small group of Democrats boycotting the president's visit over Israel's treatment of Palestinians and its controversial judicial reforms. Herzog acknowledged the tension in his speech and said criticisms of Israel must not cross the line into denial of Israel's right to exist. An unprecedented affront to the Catholic Church in Iraq. The president of Iraq has revoked a decree recognizing Cardinal Louis Sacco as head of the Christian Church there. The patriarch of the Chaldean Catholic Church now says he will move from his home in Baghdad to a monastery in Kurdistan, an autonomous region of Iraq. Sacco has led the Eastern Rite Church for two decades, since before the fall of Saddam Hussein. The Chaldean Catholic Church has hundreds of thousands of members across the world, 300,000 of whom remain in Iraq. Cardinal Sacco has had the difficult task of shepherding them through the war, repeated ISIS attacks, and now a country filled with corruption.
It's a very disturbing thing that has happened, totally unprecedented and really bad news. The Chaldean Christians, Chaldean Catholics have suffered greatly over the past 20 years, and this is a very worrying development.
Ambassador Fernandez says the Chaldean Catholic Church has custody of large amounts of property, particularly in Baghdad. He says Cardinal Sacco may be the victim of a corrupt government trying to squeeze the church out of valuable assets. The U.S. State Department has called it a blow to religious freedom. A bishop appointed by Chinese authorities without Vatican approval is confirmed by Pope Francis. Bishop Joseph Shenbin was installed in the Diocese of Shanghai in April. Pope Francis approved his appointment last weekend, 3 months after the fact. Vatican Secretary of State Cardinal Pietro Parolin said the Vatican waited before commenting on the case in order to evaluate the pastoral needs in the diocese. The Diocese of Shanghai is the largest in China and has been without a bishop for more than a decade. The move by the Chinese Communist Party to appoint a Catholic bishop was in violation of the China-Vatican agreement. Although the text of the agreement has never been made public, it reportedly allows the CCP to choose bishops. The Pope then approves or denies that choice. That agreement, which began in 2018, has been renewed every 2 years. Cardinal Parolin said the Pope's intention is to allow the bishop to work with greater serenity to promote evangelization and foster ecclesial communion. It is the Chinese government's second unauthorized appointment in the past year. For the first time in history, a pope will visit Mongolia. It holds one of the world's smallest Catholic communities, just 1,500 Catholics among a population of more than 3 million. Cardinal Giorgio Morengo, apostolic prefect in Mongolia, says he hopes the visit will help Catholics there understand that they're part of a global religion. Francis will visit government and civic leaders, take part in an interreligious gathering, and celebrate Mass. The country, which sits between China and Russia, will host Pope Francis from August 31st to September 4th. To help us analyze these developments, we're joined by our colleague in the Vatican Bureau, Courtney Mares, from the Catholic News Agency. Her reporting often focuses on China and religious liberty violations there. Courtney, it's great to have you. This Vatican-China deal, as it has been called, has drawn regrets from top Vatican diplomat Archbishop Paul Gallagher, as well as others. What is their view of the deal now?
Well, this is the second time in the past year that the Vatican has acknowledged that China violated its provisional agreement with the Holy See on the appointment of bishops. In this case, Bishop Joseph Shenbin was transferred from another Chinese diocese and installed in Shanghai without the Vatican's consent. And now, 3 months later, the popes decided to recognize and confirm China's unilateral appointment of this bishop. Even more troubling from the Vatican's perspective, though, is in the past year, China has created some of its own dioceses, and these have different borders than those recognized by the church, as was the case with the installation of the bishop last November in the Diocese of Shaanxi, a diocese that is not recognized by the Vatican. Despite the repeated violations of the agreement, the contents which have been kept completely secret over the past 5 years, the Vatican Secretary of State Cardinal Pietro Parolin said this week that the Holy See is determined to continue dialogue with China, and said that evangelization and communication between Chinese bishops and the Pope need to be the topics of discussion moving forward.
Now, Courtney, knowing that, what does this approval of this Bishop Joseph Shenbin tell us about the Holy Father's desires for the church in China, knowing that it affects the largest Catholic diocese in China?
According to the Vatican, Pope Francis's decision to recognize the government-appointed Bishop of Shanghai was a pastoral decision made to remedy the canonical irregularity in the diocese and for the greater good of the Catholic community in Shanghai, which has been without a bishop for more than 10 years. And we also gained insights this week into what steps the Holy See wants to see from China going forward in dialogue. Cardinal Pietro Parolin called for the creation of a liaison office of the Holy See in China to improve dialogue. And many see this as something which could lay the groundwork for a future apostolic nunciature or Vatican embassy on the mainland.
Your report in late May showed that after his third election, that where he was the only candidate, President Xi Jinping continues to be blamed for the deterioration of human rights and religious freedom in the country. You know this very well, Courtney. What are his worst offenses?
Over the last decade of increasingly authoritarian rule from Xi Jinping, and even just in the past 5 years since the Vatican-China deal was signed, we have seen a ruthless crackdown on freedom of expression and religion, arbitrary detentions, and the escalation of repression in Hong Kong. But among the most shocking violations has been the Chinese Communist Party's targeted campaign against Uyghur Muslims in the northwest region of Xinjiang, China, where people have been detained in internment camps, subjected to forced labor, torture, sterilization, and mass surveillance, according to the most recent report by the U.S. government. Among China's Catholic community, we've seen Catholics in the underground Catholic Church experience harsh treatment, with convents destroyed, churches closed, and bishops under house arrest. The government-approved Catholic Church, on the other hand, faces other challenges, including pressure from the government to censor parts of Catholic teaching or to include Chinese nationalism and love for the party into the preaching. And Catholic priests in China are only allowed to minister in recognized places of worship in which minors under the age of 18 are not allowed to enter, something which surely will have an effect on China's Catholic future.
Well, it sounds a lot like what's going on in Cuba as well. Courtney, we'll be watching your reporting on the Pope's visit to Mongolia and why China and Russia are watching that very closely. Thank you so much for being with us. Despite the frailty old age often brings, we honor the wisdom, the knowledge, and the compassion of seniors as dioceses around the globe celebrate the third World Day for Grandparents and the Elderly this weekend. From our Vatican Bureau, Rudolf Gehrig tells us about this special day inaugurated 3 years ago by Pope Francis, who has taken a special interest in those who have experienced many birthdays.
Lo Spirito Santo ancora oggi suscita.
The Holy Spirit still stirs up thoughts and words of wisdom in the elderly today. Their voice is precious because it sings the praises of God and safeguards the roots of peoples. They remind us that old age is a gift and that grandfathers are the link between generations, passing on the experience of life and faith to the young.
Per trasmettere ai giovani l'esperienza di vita e di fede.
About 1 week before World Youth Day in Lisbon, the Catholic Church will celebrate World Day for Grandparents and the Elderly on July the 23rd. It is in the tradition of the Church to care for the elderly. The scriptures call for reverence and respect for the older generations. They have a high status, not only in the Judeo-Christian tradition.
We see it in so many different cultures. Just in my rare experiences in Africa, obviously the elders of tribes, of families, are very, very important, precisely for what the Pope says, for passing on their experience, their values. Not only what they learned that worked out, but the mistakes they make. You know, don't do this because it just won't work out in your favor. So that's a huge thing that can be passed on to young people, help them avoid the pitfalls.
The church itself wants to set a good example. The last years of Pope John Paul II's life were marked by suffering. Seeing the Vicar of Christ represent his Lord, even in pain, moved people all over the world. Pope Francis is also not ashamed to show his physical weaknesses to the world. Perhaps because of that frailty, he feels a special mandate to advocate for the elderly. 2 years ago, he presented this idea.
I nonni tante volte sono dimenticati.
Grandparents are often forgotten, and we forget this wealth of preserving roots and passing on. This is why I have decided to establish World Day for Grandparents and the Elderly, which will be held throughout the church every year on the fourth Sunday of July, close to the feast of Saints Joachim and Anne, Jesus' grandparents.
This weekend marks the third World Day for Grandparents and the Elderly. Its motto, His mercy is from age to age.
Pope Francis noted that this year, actually as in most years, he says, the World Day for Grandparents and the Elderly takes place close to World Youth Day. In this way, we look at the bond that unites the young and old, said the Pope. The Lord trusts that young people, through their relationships with the elderly, will realize that they are called to cultivate memory.
In 2020, the Vatican organized an international congress specifically focused on the elderly, titled The Richness of Many Years of Life.
We have to find a vocation for the elderly. And I think that when you talk about vocation, you talk about the future. Prayer is not something that we can learn from the elderly, but every Christian is called to pray, and gratuitousness, and relationship. I mean, the time of the of life, the old age, is a time of life when relationship is everything. So let's become friends of the elderly, and we will understand how to overcome our lonely society.
Innanzitutto, crea comunità con gli anziani.
First, create community with the elderly, because one of the greatest problems of older people today is loneliness and the lack of an end of life and a purpose in life. Then, give these elderly a community. Don't let them be alone and give them a chance to help others who need it most, first of all, in prayer.
Pope Francis, however, is concerned not only about helping the elderly, but also about preserving their dignity.
Nowadays, in secularized societies in many countries, parents do not have, for the most part, the Christian formation and living faith that the grandparents have, which they can pass on to their grandchildren. They are the indispensable link in educating children and young people in the faith. They are not only people whom we are called to safeguard, they can be the protagonists of a pastoral evangelizing ministry, privileged witnesses of God's faithful love.
In his message for World Day of Grandparents and the Elderly 2023, Pope Francis calls on young people to visit their grandparents or an elderly person as part of their preparation for World Youth Day. At the same time, the Holy Father addresses a request directly to the elderly, saying, those young people are God's answer to your prayers, the fruits of all that you have sown, the sign that God does not abandon his people, but always rejuvenates them with the creativity of the Holy Spirit. In Rome, Rudolf Gehrich, EWTN News in Depth.
Pope Francis is presiding this weekend over a mass at St. Peter's Basilica to commemorate World Day for Grandparents and the Elderly. At the end of the celebration, five elderly people representing five continents will hand over the World Youth Day Pilgrim's Cross to five young people leaving for the gathering of young people in Lisbon the first week of August. It's meant to symbolize the transmission of faith from age to age.
We need stronger families. Holier families, stronger marriages, holier marriages. So if we believe that, then how are we demonstrating that by the allocation of our resources.
Putting the necessary funding in place to support the Catholic Church's strong message about the importance of family. One Catholic diocese steps up with a generous new family leave policy. That story ahead.
I'm really passionate about what I do. I feel that working in Catholic education is a vocational call for me, but I also feel that being a wife and a mother is a vocational call too.
Juggling work and the needs of family life. Are our Catholic dioceses supporting their employees as the Church teaches life must be cherished and protected? The EWTN News in Depth team conducted a survey of paid family leave policies for the five largest archdioceses in the United States: Los Angeles, New York, Chicago, Boston, and Philadelphia. None have universal paid family leave for all of their employees. In the Archdiocese of Los Angeles, employees of the Archdiocesan Catholic Center and the cemeteries and mortuaries are able to take up to 8 weeks of leave at partial salary after a birth or adoption, or to care for a family member because they qualify for California state paid family leave. Funding is not provided by the Archdiocese. Employees of parishes and schools may use voluntary disability insurance or accrued vacation and sick time. In the Archdiocese of New York, also because of state paid leave not provided by the Archdiocese, most full-time employees may take up to 12 weeks of leave at partial salary for a qualifying event. In some divisions of the Archdiocese, including central offices, mothers only may take up to 24 weeks with partial pay. Some of those weeks are funded by the Archdiocese. The Archdiocese of Chicago, at its expense, pays for parental leave for up to 12 weeks. In the Archdiocese of Philadelphia, employees, including at parishes and schools, are eligible for parental leave for up to 6 weeks, funded by the Archdiocese. And, despite our repeated requests for information about its family leave policy, the Boston Archdiocese did not respond to EWTN News. A new family leave plan just went into effect in the Diocese of Arlington, Virginia. Its bishop was convinced more generous benefits were necessary after surveying the needs of his employees and keeping church teaching on families top of mind. Rizal Reyes has This Catholic Life report.
My dad is a loving, compassionate, you know, individual, and he's 90 years old.
Karen Poindexter has been the main caregiver for her father since he was diagnosed with dementia about 7 years ago.
Trying to balance all of that out, trying to balance being a wife to my husband, you know, and still being there for the family, it can be overwhelming in so many aspects.
As caregiver, she checks on her father daily and takes him to his doctor appointments.
Unfortunately, within the last year or so, it's become a little more dependent on us. It's gotten to a point where he doesn't even know how to put on his clothing without asking kind of for assistance or am I doing it right?
Poindexter found herself in a predicament other older adults are experiencing in the nation. According to the University of Michigan's national poll on healthy aging, 54% of adults 50 and older report being caregivers to seniors. The survey also found nearly all caregivers are unpaid and nearly half of the recipients are elderly parents. On top of being a caregiver, Poindexter is also juggling a full-time job working for the Diocese of Arlington, Virginia, as a data analyst.
I've used a lot of my leave during the time because just taking a doctor's appointments.
When the diocese announced a new 8-week paid family and medical leave policy, Poindexter was ecstatic. It went into effect on July 1st for eligible employees.
This policy that has been instituted is just a breath of fresh air. It's just so helpful, as you said, for everybody, for all walks of life, for quality of life. It's just something that we all need to embrace.
About 3,000 lay employees of the diocese are now eligible to take paid leave in order to address family needs resulting from childbirth, adoption, a close relative's illness,
or their own medical concerns. Additionally, the diocese has expanded its bereavement leave policy to provide employees up to 10 days of paid leave for the loss of a loved one. Another employee, Haley Martin, is also grateful for the new policy, which came at an opportune moment.
The implementation of this policy is personally impactful for me, as I'm welcoming my first this week. She's due this week. So it was right on time. God's timing really aligned with our timing there.
Martin is the assistant principal at St. Timothy Catholic School in Chantilly, Virginia. As a first-time expectant mother, she was initially worried she would not have enough time to bond with her newborn baby.
It's going to be just full of such joy. We can't wait for her to be here. And so to know that we have that uninterrupted time to welcome her and to adjust to life as a family of three before returning to the busyness of work and a routine and a structure is more than we could ask for.
The Diocese of Arlington is just one of a few dioceses in the nation to offer paid maternity leave, according to the media company Femme Catholic. Last year, it reached out to 176 dioceses across all 50 states, including Washington, D.C. A large number did not respond. Of those that did, only 31 dioceses said they offer fully paid maternity leave. 32 provided some percentage of employee salaries through state paid leave laws or short-term disability. And 44 said they offered no form of paid leave at all. Bishop Michael Burbage of the Diocese of Arlington says the new paid family leave policy in his diocese was the result of surveying his employees. Taking a look at employee absences in 2022, almost 68% of employees took leave to care for a family member, and nearly 33% took leave after the birth or adoption of a child. Employees had to utilize vacation time, sick leave, or short-term disability leave.
How is our allocation of resources and priorities demonstrating what we believe? And I think that this family leave policy is clearly saying to us, family life, marriages are extremely, extremely important. And we want to be a part of strengthening those gifts to the church.
Bishop Burbage says his diocese had to reallocate resources to make the paid family leave policy work, but it was worth it.
Every diocese's means are different, and so it varies from one diocese to another. But I think, as my brother bishops who are running dioceses know very well, you're constantly evaluating how can we help. And how can we demonstrate who we are as a church? Pro-life, pro-family, pro-marriage.
Russell Regis, EWTN News in Depth.
We'll be back in a moment with our faith journey and images of the week right after this.
I know I have my faith to lean back on, and it's, you know, it's helpful in tough times to you know, have a chat with the Lord.
The former head of Visa Incorporated, one of the largest financial services companies in the world, tells us Catholic faith and good works can coexist with success in business. How he did it, next.
Success and profits in big business and generosity and good works for the community do not have to conflict. They can go hand in hand. That's the message from the newly retired CEO of Visa, the billion-dollar credit card company. Al Kelly remains chairman of the board of Visa. Our Colin Flynn sat down in New York City with Kelly to discuss business, philanthropy, and the impact of his Catholic upbringing in this faith journey in depth.
Al Kelly, it's a pleasure to meet you, and thank you so much for doing this interview.
Delighted to be with you, Colin.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing great, thank you.
Al, you have made it to the pinnacle of success in the business world here in the United States. You're the executive chairman now of Visa. You were the CEO for 8 years. Revenue grew by, I think it was 90%, 26,500 employees. You're paid tens of millions of dollars a year. But what makes Al Kelly happy?
Family and friends. And in short, that's really what it's all about. And, you know, I love my association with Visa. It was the honor of a lifetime to be the CEO of such a great global company. I learned a lot. I work with, and do still do work with, fantastic people. But Colm, I have my weekends back because I don't have to read 300 emails that I didn't get to during the week. And
do you miss it, though? Do you miss being the CEO?
It's only been 3 months. I don't. This is something that I thought, I drove this decision. I always thought that the year I turned 65, and I turned 65 in a couple of months, was a milestone to move to another chapter. And it just felt like all the planets were aligning. I just had, in the last year, I've had my first two grandchildren. So I think it's just time, which is exciting. It's a whole new, chapter, which is awesome.
What's it like being, you've had all these fancy titles, but now grandfather is a new title.
Pop. It's awesome. And, people who were grandparents before me talked about how great it is, and it really is terrific. Not only to see the little ones, but to see your own children
becoming parents.
Becoming parents. It's pretty cool.
And speaking of family, if we go back and we time travel to, you were born in Bronxville?
I was born in Bronxville, but quickly, my brother, I'm the oldest of seven, my brother Bill, who's 15 months younger than I am, right before he was born, my parents moved to Yonkers.
And Al, what were you interested in as a young guy growing up? What was your passion or your flair in life?
Well, I guess educationally, I was very taken with mathematics. I was never kind of a dreamer about myself and my career. I always kind of had a philosophy, though, that I was going to try to outwork everybody. I'm very competitive, and I've been very blessed with good fortune, which, by the way, is part of being successful, is it isn't always just about what you know and what you've done.
Right place at the right time.
Often that's the case.
I saw a great talk you gave once, and I think it was students you were talking to, and you were talking about the three C's to success. As you just mentioned, having a curiosity about everything in the world. The other one was communication. And courage, standing up for what you believe in. But let's talk about the fourth C in your life, Catholicism, your Catholic faith, something that has always been important to you?
For as far back as I can remember, both my parents were, quite committed and dedicated Catholics, and kind of instilled it in us. I went to, I remember going to church at an early age. I went to our local Catholic grammar school. I was an altar server from fourth grade to eighth grade, back when, it was very serious. I mean, now it seems, as I watch young people on the altar at Mass, it seems much more casual now. But we were drilled.
You knew your Latin back then?
I just escaped the Latin.
Oh, you just escaped it, okay.
But that helped, further strengthen my faith. And I don't wear it on my sleeve, but it's important. It's important to me.
Is it a difficult thing to be a hugely successful businessman and a good practicing Catholic as well? Because I'm sure there are sometimes to move ahead in business, to get to the top of a company like Visa, maybe do you have to do things that clash with your beliefs or your Catholic faith, or because it's no easy task to get to the position that you've got to.
Yeah, I think you can compartmentalize a bit parts of your life. I mean, I think I can be a good Catholic and at the same time be a hopefully smart and pragmatic leader of a company. As it relates to my Catholic faith, I answer to the Lord, and as the time I was CEO of Visa, I answered to shareholders and other key constituents. And I know I have my faith to lean back on, and it's helpful in tough times to have a chat with the Lord. And
have you done that before, Al, before big business decisions, or have you sat down and prayed about it?
Oh, sure. It's not unusual for me at all, to say, I hope I'm doing the right thing. It's just an extra sense of strength you get from something like that. I'm not saying you need it to be. I don't know that you need to have faith to be a good executive. I think it's a bonus if you do. It's just another outlet. It's another way for you to another prism through which you can think about your decision making, and I, for one, find it valuable.
And I know you've become good friends with Cardinal Timothy Dolan here in New York City, and he's approached you a number of times to look after the organizing of the papal trip when Pope Francis came here in 2015.
Right.
And then he asked you to be on the board of the Mother Cabrini Health Foundation.
He not only asked me to be on the board, he specifically asked me to become chair of the Mother Cabrini Health Foundation, which I've been doing for the last 5 years. It's a fantastic organization. We have about just under $4 billion of assets. We don't raise money. The money came about from
the sale of that insurance company.
We have a Medicare company. So we give away about 5% of the money, $150 to $175 million a year. We're restricted to New York State. So a state's a big part, but it's not the entire country. And we give to largely every conceivable person who has some challenges in their life. So it could be unwed mothers, it could be orphaned children, it could be formerly incarcerated people who are trying to get their life back in order after spending some time in prison. And I'd like to believe we're doing a heck of a lot of good for a lot of people.
We filmed before up at the Elizabeth Seton Children's Hospital, and they have benefited from the Mother Cabrini Foundation and just the incredible work that they're doing for people, children with the most severe special needs.
Who have no other place to go. I've been familiar with the Elizabeth Seton and the work they've done for probably 30 years now, and it is, talk about doing the work of the Lord, it's amazing.
Kelly, it's been a pleasure talking to you. I know you're extremely busy, and we've been trying to set this up for a while, so thank you for your time.
Colin, a pleasure. Thank you. Great to be with you. Thank you.
Kelly may be spending less time at Visa, but all that energy continues in his Catholic philanthropy. Thank God for those works of charity. We close our program today with some summer fun at the Holy See. Hundreds of children took part in the Vatican's summer camp and even got to sit down with Pope Francis.
Uno, due, tre. Grazie. Ai nostri genitori.
On Wednesday, the Holy Father led the youngsters in saying a big thank you to parents and encouraged them to say it often. The camp drew on Pope Francis's emphasis on treating everyone as a brother or sister. And what greater sign of fraternity than a friendship bracelet? Even Pope Francis sorted the colorful bands along with the children. The young people ended their meeting with reciting the Our Father and receiving an apostolic blessing. And that does it for this edition of EWTN News In Depth. I'm Montse Alvarado. Join us next week for an entire program about the upcoming World Youth Day, the scene right now in host city Lisbon, the young people excited to attend, and the issues facing our youth today. That and more, same time next week. See you then.